Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and I'm sitting down with Tim Rogers today. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Fred. How are you?
Good, good. And apparently it's a nice day there. We had to delay starting recording until the lawnmowers in the neighborhood were quieting down. So I think we're good now, right? They're not going to start up next door?
I don't think so. Right, I think we're done with that.
No leaf blowers under your window?
Not that I know of. It looks pretty clear right now.
All right. Well, that's great. Well, one of the things we chatted about just as we were waiting for the background noise to settle down was this the advent of 3D printing. And we're seeing it. I saw an ad this morning online on a LinkedIn article that was a pen that would extrude polymer that would basically freeze in you could draw complex 3D shapes with it. But I'm sure has heard about just regular old 3D printing where it's an additive process, and there's medical applications and prototyping applications and even products that are being made that way. And you mentioned this, I think you said that UPS, United Parcel Service, is getting into the game.
Yeah, they've established there was an article, I think, in Wall Street Journal earlier this week. So they've established a relationship with a company that makes a printer. And they provide this service. I think it's out of their hub in Nashville. And so they will take a file that's sent electronically. This is UPS. Mm-hmm. They'll do the 3D printing to produce a part, and then they'll turn it around and send it back to you within 24 hours. So that's the kind of service that they're promoting. It's pretty exciting stuff. We're seeing as more and more materials are being adapted to 3D printing, I think it's really opening up a lot of possibilities.
Well, I remember in creating, when I was working with the inkjet printer division, it took us weeks to get a prototype back. You know, and there was a lot of electromechanical systems, but a circuit board would take a couple of weeks minimum to create the board, to populate the board with all the components and build it and get it to the designers. I don't think we're at the point where we can 3D print, Intel chips. But if I could create the circuit board and take a week out of that process, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest and most important applications of 3D printing is in prototyping. Obviously, trying to do a production run for a large quantity of parts would be a lot more time consuming. But just one of the things that 3D printing takes out of the equation is anything that's required for tooling. It's going to significantly reduce the time and reduce the cost of getting a prototype made, because you're going to be able to cut that tooling time and tooling cost out of the equation.
Well, for molded parts, like for the outer skins of the printers that we used to make, it was almost like a carving process. They take a block of material and shape it and kind of get it close to the design, but it didn't have the material properties. It didn't really have the finish and some other stuff. It gave us a rough idea of the final product, but you're right. Once we got into tooling, it was 6 weeks lead time a lot of times.
That's right.
And that was some serious metal cutting to make the molds.
Exactly.
Was the that part. But now if we can just print it and these complex shapes, then especially overnight.
Man, that's pretty impressive. And again, I want to emphasize the value here is in getting quick feedback on your design, particularly from a mechanical standpoint. Form factor. This is more your area of expertise, Fred, but I guess my concern would be what kind of conclusions you can draw about quality and reliability from a 3D printed part that's may or may not be all that similar to the what the final production version is going to look like.
Well, there's remember though that one of the reasons products get returned is not just because it doesn't power on or doesn't perform its particular function, but it's the wrong shape. It doesn't fit my hand. It feels awkward, or it's you know, all of those, most people would call them quality attributes. But once the customer buys it, takes it home, and they go, ugh, I don't like this, they may return it, or they may tell other people not to buy it because it doesn't, it's not aesthetic, it's not comfortable to use, it's got all these other issues. Those are reliability problems. They show up on your warranty part. It's not that the capacitor fell off and it doesn't power on. It's, you know, there's the softer sides to why people return things. And so I think you can really get a lot of that input and information, and you can get these early prototypes, not only in the hands of the designers, but in potential customers. So they can take, you know, give it a look and feel and give you feedback on it. And if you can make it, you know, a couple dozen of those overnight, you've got, you're breaking through that expense and the barrier to how many samples you can get.
Sure.
Right. And you get them quicker. So I think there's two benefits. One of them is the softer side, especially for molded parts. And, but even on just on functional parts is, it's not just the assembly process of, say, a circuit board that causes reliability problems. It's also, is the timing right? How does it behave in different temperatures and so on? So there's we're going to push into the limit of what this 3D printed material set can replicate that we're concerned about from a reliability point of view, and then have to respect the boundaries that, yeah, it's a different material or process. But the advantage of getting prototypes quicker, if we could create a prototype every week and get it on the designer's desk, or basically over the weekend, instead of being limited to, say, two proto runs before we go to tooling, basically, is now we've got, we could do this 20 times.
Right.
And the designer can take it out of the CAD system. They can take it out of the theory system, and they can actually make measurements. They can check functionality. They can check look and feel and balance and all those things. That just helps us to identify what are the risk areas so that when we do go into production type quality of the systems, we know what to look for, where we need to find information. And it reduces the burden on those final prototypes of what we need to actually evaluate from a reliability point of view. So I think there's a bunch of advantages, mostly in that we get feedback to the designers quicker on the functional parts.
Yeah, I know, speaking for myself, it's a part isn't real until I can actually, you know, handle it.
That's right.
So just looking at a drawing, it is often hard to understand what the issues are. But if you've got something, even if it's not the same material that you're going to be using in the final version of the part, it just gives you a better sense of how this whole thing is going to fit together.
Well, and you also mentioned that, and I agree, is what I'm seeing is that the capabilities of 3D printing is polymers and metals and I mean,
composites,
all kinds of exotic materials are able to be 3D printed. And some of them are very, very durable. And I think going to scale and making 1,000 a day is cost prohibitive. But if it's a single prototype or a handful of prototypes you're making, it's better than creating the tooling, which you would need to make thousands a day. So it breaks that barrier. But I've seen this where I see one of the applications, and I saw an ad for it a few months ago, is especially for older machinery. And so for plant maintenance type activities, if you've got a really complex piece of equipment and you need one cam, for example, right? We could go down to the mill basically and cut this part ourselves and do all these other things with it. But for some of these components, they're rather complex in their mechanical structure.
Right.
And so one of the applications is to be able to 3D print a custom bearing, for example, that we probably couldn't make it if we tried, and be able to keep the equipment running. So I think it's going to hit reliability both in the feedback and the design process, but also as in our maintenance world.
How quickly, yeah, how quickly and effectively you can respond to field issues.
That's right.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool to be able to basically replace a broken part overnight, to be able to produce a part as a replacement, you know, and do that very quickly, as opposed to, well, let's see what we have in inventory. Well, sorry, we don't have that part in inventory. It's going to be X number of weeks or months before we can get a replacement. Mm-hmm. Hey, how about if you just buy a brand new piece of equipment instead? Right?
Well, there is that business side to it. Is it going to scavenge, you know, new sales? I think there's folks that are concerned with that. You know, I saw an article, I think I remember it correctly, is that they're moving a 3D printer up to the space station. With the idea of,
I see that.
I'm not sure if it's just to print, you know, new forks and knives or something for the kitchen, the galley, or what kind of printing it would do for them. But I think it was to increase the inventory of spare parts.
Yes.
Was the idea.
That sounds familiar. Yeah, I'm very interested in the economics of 3D printing also, Fred. I'm kind of curious to know how traditional suppliers are going to adapt to 3D printing. But right now, it seems like the folks that are focusing on 3D printing are more in the prototype business, or in the new product evaluation business. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be interested to see how more traditional suppliers find ways to adapt to 3D printing, because as you said, it kind of cannibalizes. I like that word. It's cannibalizing some of their current business.
Well, I mean, when polymer or plastic molding, the big molding machines came on into the forefront. Prior to that, we were doing milling, right? A reductive process. And then we created this injection molding system. And that was a disruptive to the system. You know, we didn't put electronics in tin boxes anywhere. We were putting them in fancy curved plastic boxes.
Yes.
And then we saw buildings just full of molding machines. So if we needed to scale up some component or part or earbuds or whatever they were, there'd be a mold created for it. Now, imagine that same building full of 3D printers that, as the speed of them and the durability of the results improve, it avoids the tooling costs.
That's right.
And so that same machine can make, you know, could make a custom fit earbud, for example, for each person. They could do a scan of a person's ear, and every product can be different, which is an added service rather than just mass production. Plus the flexibility of that equipment. Today it could be making one part and tomorrow be making something else.
Good point.
So I think the smarter producers are going to figure out at what's that tipping point. When is it cost effective and fast enough to make a viable product?
Right. So, Fred, I don't know how much you know about the materials that are being used here, but how different are they from a reliability standpoint? I mean, what could we get to the point where we've been talking about 3D printing in terms of prototyping for form factor or something like that, but how far away are we from actually being able to use the same materials both for, I mean, do we have materials that can be 3D printed that are reliable?
Well, that always brings up the question of, well, how reliable is good enough?
Yeah.
Right. I know in the maker world of the hobbyists doing 3D printing is a relatively big market is the dollhouses and toys. Right. So if you want to do a unique Victorian suite for your dollhouse, you can 3D print it. Mm-hmm. And it's as reliable from what the few samples I've seen of that are of a molded part or of a handcrafted wooden model, for example. They are amazingly stiff. I don't know what the right word is.
Right, right.
They're pretty solid.
Because wouldn't it be great if we could use those same 3D printed parts to get a head start on our reliability testing?
It would be. And what I'm seeing is like in the medical field, the 3D printing of joints and of implants, of like hip and knee and ankle replacements, and mm-hmm. some of the components are custom fit to that person's existing structure, and then they 3D print it. And so those are obviously very, very durable. They're also exceedingly expensive, but you get the right fit. Just right. For example, I saw a video a couple weeks ago where they were doing a spray on shirt.
Fabric. I saw that too. Yeah.
You know, a spray on fabric, and it's a custom fit to your particular body at that moment. And I think, didn't Levi's try this a few years ago, as they did a 3D scan of you, and then they had a machine that would cut and sew a pair of jeans for you that fit perfectly.
I didn't see that.
I don't think that's quite scaled, or they figured out whether it's still a viable product, but I think it's that the niches where a custom fit makes sense. Well, it's the equivalent, though, Tim, to the printing. It's like the offset printers can do very inexpensive mass-produced magazines, where if you print on demand and do the digital printing, you can print a unique magazine for each subscriber, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know if that technology is being used for that application, but they could print labels and addresses, and you know, you print your name in the intro, basically, on so that's every right. magazine was different and would be uniquely printed. And it was cost competitive with offset printing when they did
That's the key. Yeah. Is it cost competitive? Yeah. Again, I was thinking about it in terms of getting a head start on reliability testing. So again, if the materials that you're using to 3D print a part are dramatically different, then your reliability testing doesn't really carry a lot of weight. You want to create as much similarity as possible between the prototypes and the production units.
Well, there's two pieces of that, Tim. There's one is if my final product is going to be 3D printed, then I can start. There. I'm already there. I can start immediately. And then it's just, what are the design changes that are coming up that we need to accommodate in it? Some of the reliability part, though, is, well, all those functional elements, right? So if I'm printing a circuit board, for example, to get a quicker prototype, if the copper is still copper and it behaves like the final copper is going to behave,
right?
Then I can test how does it respond to temperature, how does it respond to different things. Vibration may not make sense. If I'm using a composite that's not as response, it doesn't have the same response as a fiberglass composite, then no. I think there's going to be barriers to the material properties itself will dictate what we can and can't do on it. So I think the answer is, depending on what you're looking for, you can get a head start on it. I think there's significant advantage there, but it's with caution. You're not going to qualify it without getting your production parts if the production parts are not 3D printed.
Exactly. Exactly right. So it's going to require a little bit of creativity on the part of our reliability engineers to figure out how they can make the best use of these 3D parts.
That's right. Exactly right. So I think it's going to be exciting. I think there's going to be cool stuff coming up.
You know, you touched on this already, but I think one of the interesting, possibilities is actually being able to integrate more functionality in a given part. So you were talking about printing circuitry onto a three-dimensional part. Mm-hmm. So, when you and I grew up, it was printed circuit boards were flat, right?
Yeah, they were stiff,
planar. Yeah. And now we're starting to think about, well, maybe a circuit can be printed in a 3D fashion on an existing case part, a mm-hmm. part that has multiple functions. It has a mechanical function, but it also contains the circuitry.
That's right. Yeah, it gets away from having flex circuit with connectors, right. Which are connectors are a bane to reliability of the structure. So if you can print it right in, and it eliminates components and interconnections, assembly costs, all kinds of cool stuff. It's a matter of are they durable? And it's one of the exciting parts about reliability engineering. There's always new stuff to go break and go figure out.
Good point.
It's the fun part. Well, yeah, interesting, Tim. And this is just kind of a scan of recognizing what's coming up, and it may or may not impact our particular world in the circles we in, but it's certainly going to impact them eventually. So I think keeping a heads up to this of just what's happening in the supply chain in general, and then how that comes back to the quality and reliability world. I think it's good practice to keep a heads up with that. So we'll have to keep an eye out for stuff like that. And if you as the listener have noticed some different types of activities or materials or processes that are in the news, you know, let us know. We'd like to see what's on your mind and what your thoughts are of how it may impact the world of quality and reliability. And we'll probably be able to do a little research and talk about it. So that'd be cool. So Tim, let's wrap it up there and see what our listeners come up with other interesting topics.
I look forward to it, Fred.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.